From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of September 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. It's Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Logansport, Indiana. Hear about the agricultural weather forecast from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and about the Western corn rootworm that has adapted to YieldGuard BT technology in the northeastern parts of Iowa and northern and western parts of Illinois, and what producers should do as they look out across their fields from the combine cab this fall. Entomologist Mike Gray from the U of I will be on hand during today's edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgro on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Checking the numbers in Chicago as they finished up on a Wednesday afternoon. Futures were lower. December contract for the soft red winter wheat lost today. Down 17 and a quarter at $8.69 and a quarter. The November, or rather July of next year at $8.46 was down 14 and a half cents. The hard red in Kansas City, 17 and a half lower at $8.65 and a quarter there. Corn futures now, December contract, a 20 cent loss today at $7.23 and three quarters. The March corn at $7.27, down 20 and a half. And May futures of 2013 at $7.27.5 a bushel, down 18.5 cents. July, $7.21.5, down 18.75. And September at $6.44.5 for next year, down 17.75. December of 2013 at $6.22.25, down 16.5 cents. And the March contract of 2014, $6.27, down 19.25. November bean futures at $15.73, a settlement price here, down 38.5 cents. January at $15.74.25, down 40, and the March at $15.31.75, 44.75 lower. May contract in the bean pit at $14.88.25, down 37.75, and July at $14.70, down 35.75. November beans of next year at $13.21.25 on a settlement price, down 30.75. Bean meal futures October contract at $4.75.10, down $10. And 10 cents, and the bean oil at $51.65, $1.44 lower. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Mercantile Exchange live cattle futures finished the day 47.5 cents lower at 122.22.5. December there at 124.75, down 65. September feeders at 143.45 or 25 cents higher. The October at 146.10, up 92.5 cents. And lean hogs on the day at $76.87.5, up 60 cents on the afternoon. The outside markets finished up like this, or trading actually. November crude oil at $89.94, down $1.43. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at $3.06.6. That's 9.9 higher. Ethanol at $2.27.7, down 3.6. The spread change was 13.5 cents, and it's now standing at 83.9 cents. To the positive side for the use of ethanol. October natural gas at $3.02.3, up 9.9, and heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.10 even. That's just about 0.8 cents lower. Gold futures on the day at $1,750.70, down $13.20, and the dollar at 79.88. That's up 0.33. The CRB index at 303.69, down 2.94. Here's what the weather forecast looks like from the National Weather Service. For the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, should be partly sunny, a high of 75 degrees on a north-northwest wind at about 5 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation this afternoon at 40%. Tonight, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Should be mostly cloudy, a low of 50. And then tomorrow, partly sunny skies, a high of 72 with a northeast wind at 7 miles an hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy and a 49-degree temp. Northeast winds at 6. Friday, partly sunny, a high of 72. On that northeast wind, continuing at about 5 miles an hour. Friday night, partly cloudy and a low of 48. Saturday, sunny skies and a high near 71. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of this half hour here on IPM.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, this is the Closing Market Report. It's a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line with us for this 26th day of September is Jackie Fakes of Stuart Peterson. She's right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie. Let's start out with the futures markets because it was a sharply lower day again today and kind of has reminders of last week a little bit.
Yeah, it certainly does, Todd. You know, when you look at the big picture, and Dave and I talked about it a little bit this morning, and it certainly showed up again today. Extremely low volume, high volatility. We've got the end of the quarter, the end of the month, and the grain stocks report, which I think most people feel the most uncomfortable about that they've ever been, coming up at the end of the week. So you have an awful lot of people who are sitting on the sidelines and just kind of waiting to find out what that report's going to say and where we should go from there. You know, we also know that we probably won't have great export numbers coming next week. We've got a holiday coming up in China called National Day, where they actually have 3 legal days off. And so, you know, the market just isn't comfortable, and it's easier to go down than it is to go up when you're in the middle of harvest.
Well, when you look at low volume days like today and some of the previous trading days, does it tell you anything about the marketplace? One thing is standing aside, but generally there's a whole lot more money floating around that plays in the volume than just those who know a big numbers or set of numbers are coming out on Friday and stand aside. There should be more money than that, I would think, playing in the marketplace.
Well, we know that the outside investor has more money invested right now than he's had, this entire year. So there's plenty of money there. It's just, where's it changing to? You know, I think we're seeing some profits being taken. I certainly know that when you sell your grain, like people are doing, and especially in the corn market this year, the people you sell it to are going to sell the board to protect themselves from having paid too much. That's what we call harvest pressure, and we certainly have a great deal of that. I think it's just a matter of we still had 130,000 contracts in corn trade yesterday and 150,000 actually in beans. It's not like there's nobody there, but there are days that we could do that much almost on the open. And so it's just a reluctance on the part of people. And, you know, you have to take that, and let's tie that to the outside markets. We've got the U.S. dollar trading higher, in fact, just a hair below 80 right now. That's coming out of big worries about the world economy. We've got riots going on in Greece. They say, I was listening to the BBC early this morning and listening to them interview people, and they were saying, well, we paid for things, and therefore we should be getting things. And the reality is Troika is checking them out right now, and if they don't meet the requirements for having done more austerity measures, they're not going to get the $39 billion, and they'll be bankrupt in a month. And so can you blame them for screaming? 54.9% of the people under the age of 25 are unemployed. You know, Spain, it's 48.9. Here in the U.S., it's 16.8. And so I think the fact that the S&P had the biggest drop yesterday since the 25th of June, the stock market's back below where it was when QE3 was announced. It just says to me that investors have concerns. And until, you know, with this upcoming election and the upcoming debates that we're going to have, people just don't feel real comfortable.
Well, what would make them comfortable?
What would make them comfortable?
That's a loaded question. You don't have to ask it. Answer it.
Oh, my goodness gracious. What would make them comfortable? I think just like how I feel about it when it comes to producers and end users, you have to have a plan. And I think at this point in time, no one feels real confident about what the plan is for the world recovery and or the U.S. recovery. And so I believe that. Don't kid yourself. They're not going to stop trading. There's no question about that. It's just a matter of the periods of time that they seem to want to sit back get to be longer as they become more insecure. When QE3 came out, everybody was excited about it. You know, the investors seemed to be thrilled about it, but nothing happened, and now they're probably saying to themselves, just like I'm asking, if the Fed can't do it, what's it going to take to do it? And I think what it comes down to is all of us as citizens in the U.S. have to pick ourselves up by the bootstraps and do what we've got to do. And you know, it's just going to take a more unified position on the part of people. And we'll see that at the polls when we get there in November. And whatever comes out of the polls comes out of the polls. But at least we'll know where we're at. And I think it's that not knowing where we're going for sure is what's making people really nervous.
Jackie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on this Wednesday afternoon.
Support for WILL Agricultural Reports comes from Country Financial. Information on federal crop insurance programs for next year is available now from your Country Financial representative or crop specialist. Country Financial is an equal opportunity provider.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. The western corn rootworm in northeastern and northern and western Illinois has been confirmed to be resistant to at least one BT technology. As you'll hear in a moment from Extension entomologist at the U of I, Mike Gray, farmers should really get out of the combine this fall in those areas and take a look at the lodged corn in their fields.
Well, as farmers roll through their fields during this harvest, they're going to see, undoubtedly, in some areas of fields, lodged corn, maybe significant areas of lodged corn in some cases. That's usually an indicator that rootworms have been hard at work during that summer, feeding on root systems and, you know, compromising the integrity of that root system, setting the stage for plants to lodge more significantly. I should add, in some cases, lodging isn't always 100% confirmation that rootworms were at work. In some cases, you might have had soil compaction, shallow root systems, storm activity, high winds can often cause lodging as well. But when you have storms and significant root pruning by rootworms, that's usually a point where plants will begin to topple over. And oftentimes, producers don't notice that rootworm injury until they're on the seat of their combines, out there in their fields, and then they notice, hey, I've got, you know, pretty significant patches of corn that are down, that are lodged. They may want to. I know harvest is a busy time, but they may want to take a closer look. Not an ideal time to look for rootworm injury. Sometimes it's difficult because of root rot that may have set in. But in some cases, you can still tell that rootworms have been at work. So maybe a good point to pause, maybe take a break and see what those root systems look like.
I take it that means getting a spade out of the pickup truck and digging some roots?
That may. That's right. Going back and just popping a few of those roots out and knocking the soil off and see if what does that root system look like? What level of pruning is there? And then you need to begin asking yourself some questions. How long have I been maybe in continuous corn, which we know has been very popular in recent years? What trait did I use? Have I been using that same BT trait for many years? How's it been performing? Have I seen this lodging before? Is it time to switch to another trait? They need to begin asking themselves those kinds of questions. Should I possibly use a non-BT hybrid at some point, along with a soil insecticide? I think those are the questions they need to have with their seed industry representative, you know, making sure they understand fully, are they in an area where rootworm resistance has been confirmed? Has it been confirmed for the type of BT trait that they've been using? They need to go into 2013 a lot more informed, certainly, than maybe they have been in recent years where they've just assumed automatically, I've got a rootworm BT hybrid out here that's going to take care of this problem.
So which of the particular BT traits should they be looking at most closely?
Right. The trait is basically the hybrids that express the Cry3BB1 protein. This is a type of protein that first entered the marketplace going back to 2003 on a very limited basis, but certainly by 2004, it was the trait that's been out there for the longest period of time. You know, it's the trait that had been expressed in the Yield Guard lineup of products, you know, marketed by Monsanto primarily, right? And it's a trait that, you know, started out, I think, working pretty well. But now we know that in some areas of the Corn Belt, last year Iowa State was able to confirm resistance in some fields in northeastern Iowa. And then last summer, in some counties in Illinois, specifically Whiteside and Henry, adults were collected from some of these problem fields where, again, producers had been in continuous corn. They had relied upon hybrids that expressed that Cry3BB1 protein for many years. That in and of itself, even though there was severe root injury and lodging, that in and of itself does not prove resistance. So, you know, you collect the adults, as we did, run their offspring through bioassays. Iowa State was able to cooperate with us on that. And, again, the results mirrored those that they had reported a year earlier. So that tells us that, you know, the rootworm population up in some areas of northwestern Illinois, north central Illinois, is evolving. It's adapting to this protein. So producers need to be made aware of that and make some intelligent choices when it comes to rootworm management for 2013.
The western corn rootworm has proven adept at adapting to technologies that farmers deploy to control it. But BT technology has been around since the mid-1990s, 95, 96, for the European corn borer. What's the difference between the BT technology used for control of the western corn rootworm and the European corn borer, and why has that insect not adapted yet?
Well, that's a very good question, and you're absolutely right. The BT technology for corn borer and other lepidopterans has been in the marketplace since the mid-90s, so one would think that, you know, some of those lepidopterans would have been the first. But there are some critical differences. First of all, the BT hybrids that are used for European corn borer and other lepidopterans, these are high-dose events. So that when European corn borer larvae are feeding on those hybrids, a very high percentage of those European corn borers die. And that's why, you know, producers have been very pleased with that technology because it is so very, very effective. When we have conducted fall corn borer surveys, you know, for many, many years, we eventually stopped doing that because, again, these are so high dose, it's hard to find survivors out in these fields. So that's one reason. The BT hybrids for corn rootworms are low to moderate dose events, so there are survivors out there every year. Secondly, the refuge strategy for European corn borers, as it turns out, tends to work pretty well when you have high-dose events. We think of the 20% structured refuge. That might be a separate field. That might be a separate block in a field. But because of the biology and the way corn borers mate and disperse, that biology works very well for that 20% structured format. We now know that for corn rootworms, that kind of structured refuge really doesn't work all that well because of the way rootworms mate and their dispersal patterns. We know that a seed mixture approach, the so-called refuge in a bag approach, is probably a preferred refuge management strategy when it comes to corn rootworm biology and dispersal patterns. So those would be the two primary reasons, the way we deploy a refuge with those high-dose events. As it turns out, that works very well for corn borers, but not as well for corn rootworms.
You mentioned refuge in the bag. Will it be adequate in the coming years to control the western corn rootworm?
Well, you know, unfortunately, if we could hit the reset button, then I think we'd have to look at, you know, these different levels, these reduced levels of refuge, 5, 10% from where we had been with 20%. But in areas where resistance has been confirmed, say some of these fields in northeastern Iowa or northwestern Illinois, the concern is by going back into those areas where resistance has been confirmed to drop the refuge from what had traditionally been 20% down to 5 or 10%, there are still some concerns that are out there. Even though that seed mixture approach is a preferable resistance management strategy for corn rootworms. So I think there are still some concerns out there by a number of entomologists in terms of lowering that refuge.
Do you suppose farmers in those regions where the western corn rootworm has adapted to the YieldGuard BT technology should not only switch to an alternate BT technology, but should also use a soil insecticide?
Well, You know, in making a decision, if you're not going to rotate, you're going to stay with corn. I mean, my first preference has been, you know, to encourage producers to try to break this cycle by utilizing a more diversified rotation plan, you know, introduce soybeans back into the mix. But if they're not going to do that, they're going to stay in continuous corn. Then I've suggested that, you know, one other possible alternative is to use a non-BT hybrid along with a soil insecticide. But again, if a producer elects not to do that because of, you know, some interest in a particular hybrid that has been very productive in their particular field and has very high yielding capability, okay, then, you know, to use a pyramided BT hybrid, one that expresses the Cry3BB1 protein that we've talked about, where resistance has been proven in some areas, along, let's say, with the Cry3435AB1, the Herculex protein, you know, that pyramided hybrid alone should provide adequate, you know, good to excellent protection when it comes to corn rootworms without having to add a soil insecticide on top of that. Now, my concern with the use of those pyramided hybrids in areas where resistance has been confirmed is that, in effect, you have really one protein, the 3435, that's working to provide the rootworm protection. And keep in mind, it's being used at a reduced refuge level, not the 20% that we've had historically, but now down to a 5% level. And what does that say? What does that mean? Well, it means you're putting a lot of selection pressure on that Cry3435AB1 protein. And as it turns out, that 3435AB protein is a pivotal protein in a lot of the hybrids that we have out there right now. And we'd sure hate to lose that particular protein. And in fact, last year, earlier this year, in March of 2012, when entomologists, 22 entomologists sent a letter to US EPA. one of the primary concerns in that letter was just that we may be compromising the durability, the long-term durability of that Cry3435AB1 by using even pyramided hybrids in those areas where resistance has been confirmed. So that's a lingering concern and challenge for the industry and for producers and for entomologists working on this insect.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Mike Gray is an extension entomologist at the University of Illinois. If you'd like to see this interview, you can do that online at our website, willag.org. That's willag.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Well, of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. And when I say you can see that interview with Mike Gray, that's actually true. It's a YouTube video, so you'll be able to watch and see Mike's impression of what he's thinking about. And sometimes you get a different feel for what's happening in the mind of the scientist when you can take a look at them. So please do visit by willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. You'll catch Mike Gray there and all the rest of our daily agricultural programming.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Well, this is the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Ben Stoller of the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Logansport, Indiana, is on the phone line to check out the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Ben.
Good afternoon, Doug.
Did you get rain overnight last night and yesterday?
You know, here in Logansport, we really didn't get much rain. I mean, we did get probably less than a fourth, maybe an eighth of an inch, but as you went south towards Lafayette, that's where the heavier rain was.
I suppose harvest continues then.
Harvest certainly does continue, yep. Seeing pretty heavy corn harvest progressing, and quite a bit of bean harvest. I mean, it certainly slowed down today with the moisture, but we have seen pretty heavy bean flow thus far.
What's the early thought about the beans?
You know, really pretty optimistic on the bean yields. Seen some even 50 and 60 bushel yields. So we had some hail damage to the south of us earlier this summer, so those beans certainly didn't do very well. But in general, guys are pretty pleased with their bean yields.
Expectations that the basis will follow the market lower as it went today?
Yeah, bean basis has at the processor has been pretty firm here. 10 over, they're just not seeing a whole lot of movement at your country elevators. They're certainly a little bit weaker in that neighborhood of 10 to 20 under.
All right, and what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn here to Clymers, 745. Corn to Delphi, 743. And beans to Delphi, 1553.
Thank you so much, Ben.
Thank you, Don.
Ben Stoller is with the Anderson's Clymers facility. He's located there in Logansport, Indiana, and joins us on the closing market report for this Wednesday afternoon. If you'd like to hear him again, you can do that at willag.org. That's willag.org. Back in a moment with the weather forecast.
Support for WILL Agricultural Reports comes from Country Financial. Information on federal crop insurance programs for next year is available now from your Country Financial representative or crop specialist. Country Financial is an equal opportunity provider.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City is on the phone line with us. Hi, Drew. How are you today?
I'm good, Todd. Hope you're doing the same.
A nice little rainfall over the last couple of days. A few clouds. I suspect they're about to go away, though. What can you tell me about the near future?
Well, it does look like we're dealing with a stationary frontal boundary right now across the lower parts of the Midwest. And as it settles slowly to the south, we'll likely see a clearing trend, as you may mentioned there. We'll likely see the precipitation becoming more concentrated tomorrow on the Ohio River Valley itself, very close to the river. You get more than 150, couple hundred miles to the north of the river, and it should be fairly decent weather for us tomorrow already. And that frontal boundary will go ahead and work its way further to the south of the river as we go into the day on Friday. So if you're just north of the river, you can expect to see your weather improve as we move into the day on Friday. And it's certainly the weekend at the moment. Looks like we should be under the influence of a high-pressure system. Should keep most everybody relatively dry. Now, some of our neighbors off to the east in Ohio, they may see some shower activity occurring as an upper-level low drops into that particular area. But for the heart of the Midwest, it looks like we'll be dry over the weekend. And the temperatures won't be bad at all. We'll expect to see a lot of 60 and 70-degree highs taking place. We may even see a couple of locations on the south side of the Ohio River maybe getting up there to around 80 degrees. That won't happen very often, but we will see that. It's going to be pleasant. The relative humidity will be low because of the high pressure system around. The winds should be light. It will be good harvest weather.
All right. I was going to ask about the humidity level because producers making their way through corn and switching to soybeans in some areas, and they'll be able to run a little bit longer in the day if the humidity levels are low over that time. How low will they be?
Well, I don't think they'll be quite low enough to make it absolutely perfect, but we'll probably see the afternoon humidity values running anywhere from around 40 to around 60%. Which isn't too bad, I suppose. It'd be better if it was a little bit lower than that. But we'll start off every morning, of course, with much higher humidity, probably upwards of around 80, 85%, because we do have this newly fallen moisture that's on the ground, and it will have a tendency to create a little bit of mist in the air or a little fog or something like that in the morning. So humidity will be high early, but in the afternoons we should see enough sunshine and lower humidity that it'll be a better environment.
Concerns about the western growing regions, particularly for hard red winter wheat in the Great Plains states?
Well, you know, we've seen some good shower and thunderstorm activity over the past 24 to 36 hours out there in parts of that region. It has not been as well distributed as I had hoped. It looks like there's going to be some areas out there that are going to end up with not such a great amount of rainfall, but every little drop is certainly going to be helpful. We are seeing some aggressive planting take place out there, and I think as long as the environment is what it is, we should see improving conditions for germination and emergence of the wheat crop and some more aggressive planting to take place after we get through with this next day or two of additional shower and thunderstorm activity. So I think it looks very good. Now, just to the north of hard red wheat country, actually starting in Nebraska and going northward all the way up to the Dakotas and even into Canada, it is very dry. And some of the wheat that is produced in those areas are going to have a real tough time establishing this season because it just doesn't look like it's going to rain much.
And a quick word on South America.
We should see aggressive corn and early soybean planting take place over the coming week because much of the rain is likely to diminish quite a bit. And we'll probably see the skies clear off, and it'll be a good environment overall for putting more seed in the ground.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That's the closing market report. I'm Todd Gleason.